Blog Talk Radio.
We locked in, family. Let's get the energy together. Let's get the frequency right. Let's get everybody tuned in. Everybody locked in. You say, hope you know. Tilt your head back, family. I'd welcome y'all to the Blaze Spirit Podcast.
Running out like a burning building. We were both trapped inside, but it doesn't matter now, cause you took me back.
Salute our family.
And when I was running in and you was running out, and the ladder wouldn't reach, and the struggles got so hard, but it doesn't matter now, cause I took you back.
Georgia,
if it brought you back then, it'll bring you back now, and I make my peace carry on somehow. But when it's all done, it might
Carolina.
Make you laugh.
Showing love. Salute all the people from the Bahamas checking in. Salute all our listening audience, family. Couldn't do this without y'all, you know what I'm saying?
If it didn't matter then, it doesn't matter now, cause, yeah, we feel the same. I could take it all in, no matter what you did, style. It was our problem then, still our problem now. We're gonna get better, let's start right here.
Podcast, y'all. Here, it be the truth, man. You're only gonna be the truth over here that says a hard pill to swallow. We say, hold your nose and tilt your head back, family. How y'all everybody doing out there, man? It is Wednesday, February the 20th, 2019. Day we've never seen before. I'm sure a day we'll never see again, family. Give yourself another round of applause. Just for being who you are, you know what I mean? And again, if the truth is something, if the
you
truth
can't
is
handle the truth,
then this ain't where you want to be, family. You know what I mean? It's the Vain Verde Podcast, family. It's what we do. I would give it up over here. So, man, how's everything going, man? Hey, yo, it's been a busy political week out here, family. I know y'all been following everything. Robert Mueller. He's about to wrap it on up, y'all. He's about to wrap it on up. They released a report today saying he could release, the report could be released as soon as next week. Now, here's the thing. Is it going to be released to the public? You know? I doubt it, seriously. I really doubt it's going to be released to the public because it's really all up to the new attorney general, if I'm not mistaken. And that guy, William Barr, you remember they had just had his confirmation hearing last week. Week before that, maybe about 2 weeks ago, probably. So, you know, it's up to him. And he's one of Trump's chosen. He's one of Trump's picks. So, y'all already know how that go, man. But, y'all know me, family. You know what I mean? I like to consider myself a reasonable or logical conspiracy theorist, if you will. More so than that, man, I like to look at all the facts of things. Even with this whole, you know, Mueller investigation, you know, they were starting to say, and one of the guys, I think it was William McCabe, saying that Trump could possibly be an asset to Russia. You know, of course, you know, the White House denied that. Trump denies it. But, you know, I find a lot of this is real interesting. You know, like right now, that think about everything that Donald Trump, you know, supposedly stands for, going against the elite. One thing y'all have to understand, man, it don't matter, never matter who runs, who sits in that office. He who controls the money controls the nation. And that's some shit you can take to the bank for real. Which I thought was a clever, you know what I mean, title to all this, because even with all of this shit going on, it plays into, I think, you know, the overall picture of what's about to happen. Because, family, I'm pretty sure war is inevitable at this point. You know, and I done said this, you know, on numerous occasions, but, you know, and I'm probably going to keep drilling in till they shit this thing down. Because I want a lot of us to be aware, man, and pay attention. But, I think that we're going to go into the banking system and to really understand the premise of war, you know, who really benefits from war, how wars are funded. I'm going to give y'all a reference. I'm actually going to play an audio clip. Because I like to, like, my audience, I, you know, I like to let y'all think, you know, we're babies out here. You know, in this, I guess you could say, in there, our media-driven intel world that we live in. You know, I like to consider us babies. You know, so as we find information, you know, we like to share it and, you know, pass it amongst each other. And that's what I like to do on my platform as well. You know. And it's not just, you know, we're going to talk about the Federal Reserve a little bit. Because a lot of people think the Federal Reserve is actually part of the government, which is so far from the truth. The Federal Reserve is actually bigger than any branch of the government. And this is fact. Something that's going to be tested. We're going to test all these theories, you know what I mean, as much, you know, today. And, of course, I'm going to give y'all references and all things. I'd like for y'all to check the information out yourself. So, we ain't going to waste a lot of time. We're going to get into it. But before we get into that, what y'all think about your boy Jussie Smollett? Now, Jussie Smollett has been indicted as a suspect for making false allegations, you know, because now it's been said these two Nigerian brothers, who I swear, I know these guys. I know this shit supposedly happened in Chicago or whatever, but I think I know these guys, man, these two fucking Nigerian guys, homosexual guys. I'm assuming they're homosexual, because now supposedly, you know, stories coming out that what about the two Nigerian guys? They were saying that they was the ones that was actually on the video the still images that they came out, and then more footage has been brought out about the brothers actually in the store buying the items, you know, to carry out this thing. And the brothers had, you know, supposedly said to the authorities that Jussie Smollett paid them, you know, that this whole thing was rehearsed. Excuse me, fam. I had to give me a little water. But yeah, they're saying that this whole thing was rehearsed. I don't know exactly how true that is, but, it's not looking good for Jussie, man. You know what I mean? This boy had the whole world. If he just trolled the whole world, man, he need to get an Emmy for that, or whatever they get, an Oscar for that. For real, if he tried to play this shit. But I didn't believe it in the first place. You know what I mean? And I done said that once before, so. And I wish no, you know what I mean? I wish no bad things on anybody. I wish jail on anybody, but come on, Jesse, man. You gotta know better than that. That's why it's hard to be. I don't even want, y'all probably gonna whoop me for saying this, but, you know, that's why it'd be hard a lot of time to support these LGBTQ motherfuckers, man. But that's how a lot of that shit gets twisted. You know what I mean? And, like, to do things like that, and people actually do shit like that, and, you know, the scam. I don't know what the premise was, what the purpose was. I would love for that to come out. I know they were trying to get a hold of his financial records, and supposedly he's not, you know, cooperating. I don't know what was the final straw or whatever, but I don't know, man. But that one thing I do know, this shit's gonna help the ratings like a motherfucker. Somebody just said in the chat, man, they said, oh, don't forget that man said he was the gay Tupac. I ain't with that shit. No, you know what? Fuck that. The fact that he said he the gay Tupac, he need to go to jail for this shit. Yeah, he gotta go to jail for this shit. Now, I'm through with that. Why you say he the gay Tupac? We don't like that. We ain't fucking with that at all. So, family, we gonna take a little break real quick. Gonna boot up. Get this set up the way I need it set up. Cause we're gonna get into it, and we're gonna have a little conversation about it. I'm gonna play play this audio clip. And you know, I might pause it in between, you know, going through, and we're gonna have a conversation about this, man, cause I think there's some information that really need to be out so people can be aware of kind of, you know, things that kind of, you know, it all ties in and what's going on today. And I want y'all to understand, nothing's new under the sun, family. Everything that you see, on the news, on CNN, it's all strategic. It's all part of a bigger plan, family. But we're going to get into it in a minute. We'll be right back, man. It's the Vain Verity Podcast.
A lot of pressure on me, so I keep this men western closely while the world keep turning on me. Yeah. As the world keep turning on me, and the herb keep burning slowly. A lot of pressure on me, so I keep this men western closely while the world keep turning on me. As the world keep turning on me, like night to day, straight to gay. Niggas change on me like every day, but I keep my head up high. And sometimes I might take a puff of the blunt to get a high. Lie to a bitch just to keep between the thighs. If it go any further, why you keep shining between your eyes? I'm a monster, and it come down to a head. Yeah, I rob your public enemy, number one. All you gotta do is say the word and get it done. Taking you on Jerry Springer, beat you as fun. Stand on the block, I'm trying to move 100 meters, son. Trying to start Armageddon, son. Trying to be the hottest nigga under the sun. Trying to shoot guns bigger than Big Pun. Shoot one in the aisle, now they on the run. Yeah.
As the world keep turning on me, and the herb keep burning slowly, a lot of pressure on me, so I keep this men western closely, while the world keep turning on me. Yeah. As the world keep turning on me, and the herb keep burning slowly, a lot of pressure on me, so I keep this men western closely, while the world keep turning on me.
Yo, as the world keep turning, blunts I keep burning. burning, doing all in my power to stop me from struggling. Cause plenty of days I had no grubbing, had me hustling, moms bitching, pops bustling. I can't lie, I was a knuckleheaded youngin' who stayed in some shit, rubber bustin' and tussin'. I done fucked chicks, started war with they husbands, but I'm still here though, how I feel, fuck them. They ain't stopping me though, they wanna pop my teeth. Learn my game from OG, so you know I'm on P, O-Y-N-T at all times. Capable with turning clubs, seems like shine, but I'd rather chill, play the low, stay on the grind. Creep on niggas quick if they cross the line. Patience killing me, though I know it takes time, but I'm holding my composure, the shit unwind and pop off.
As the world keep turning on me, and the herb keep burning slowly, a lot of pressure on me, so I keep this Midwestern closely, while the world keep turning on me. As the world keep turning on me, and the herb keep burning slowly, a lot of pressure on me, so I keep this Midwestern closely, while the world keep turning on me.
Every day is a hard day, I guess when you're dealing that hard, yeah. It never is enough when I'm doing it y'all way. Teaching me a fast food, working for small pay. I'd rather hit the register and get out y'all way. Shake a $50 a day, it's nothing I can make it in a half an hour, all from the hustling. Counting in the shower cause the block had you musty, and a pistol in the shower cause a nigga ain't for trusting. Something gotta shake cause heaven getting big like he ate. And my baby girl scraping the plate, the rent due, and if I wait another day, it's late. And Georgia Power say the lights need to generate. I laid it black, got me thinking about matrimony. How can I think about a wedding when the jacks are on me? It's like I think about the future, but the past are homie. Click back as the world keep turning on me.
Yeah, as the world keep turning on me, and the earth keep burning slowly, a lot of pressure on me. So I keep this Midwestern closely while the world keep turning on me. Yeah, as the world keep turning on me, and the earth keep burning slowly, a lot of pressure on me. So I keep this Midwestern closely while the world keep turning.
Fame Verdict Podcast. Okay, right. We back at it. Family, peace, and light. Once again, we're going to, there's something you can take to the bank again as the extra world turns by myself featuring B-More Ben and my brother Young Hot, Starboy Hot, whatever. Yeah, I would tell my name. Yo, change your name on that shit, man. Fucking Starboy Hot. He's like a star boy. He can't possibly know what the hell that shit mean, man. But I tell him, my little young man, salute to my little bro, Young Hot, man. You Young Hot to me, God. Fuck all that star boy shit. But salute to my bro, man. But y'all can check that out as the world turns off my Welcome to Black World Volume 1 mixtape. That's out on Spinrilla. Spinrilla right now. You know what I'm saying? You know, go show the young man some love, man. Again, that's As the World Turns. Myself, Pimp Black, featuring B-More Bear and Young Hot. That's on Spinrilla right now, man. Yeah, they go, man. Show the bus some love. There you go. But, yeah, family. We're going to tell you, it's Donald Trump thing, right? What brought me to this initial, want to go into this conversation tonight was I was looking at what's going on, right? Mike Pence was at one of the summits over there with a lot of the other world leaders because Trump couldn't go. And I know we're the European Union, if I'm not mistaken. Now, we know Trump has been very hypocritical of, you know, a lot of the other world leaders, the people that are supposed to be allies, you know what I mean, with Prime Minister May in particular in the UK. And when Mike Pence was, you know, he's doing this, you know, his showing his gratitude in his speech at the beginning, you know, he's like, you know, thanking, you know, Lindsey Graham, you know, Congressman for putting the meeting together. Everybody cheered and applauded. You know, and then he thanked Donald Trump like it was dead silence, bro. Like, even the Republicans, people that came with him, people that pulled his people, shit, even Lindsey Graham, nobody clapped for dude, man. So there's a lot of tension that's, like, right there. Top of that, like, right before he spoke, Prime Minister May spoke. And then she was saying things in a lot, you know what I mean, ridiculing Trump for comments that he made and, you know, kind of G-checking and why he went down. Ivanka Trump was there. She was in the crowd just listening to her dad get chewed out. So that, man, and then with, like, the Robert Mueller investigation, you know, them releasing that, the findings, you know what I mean, could be out early as next week, so. And this is crazy. This is happening like right before election time, right? Right before election time. And then Putin was making a speech in front of his, like a lot of his Russian delegates or whatever. And he said if U.S. deploys troops to the U.K., he going to target the United States. And he talked about new weapons and missiles that he has the capabilities of not only reaching the United States, not only reaching U.S., you know, targets and allies or whatever, they can be shot from wherever they are, you know, and do grave damage. So he's, you know, really testing his might. Basically, he's kind of saying why he's been so focused on it. The other states, Iran and Syria and all the rest of these guys, you know, that Russia is a power player, man. He said he would like to have a relationship with the U.S., but he made it clear he know that it ain't possible. You know, and one of the main reasons why is because Russia is trying to go against that almighty dollar. That's why the United States don't want to rock with Russia. Because that almighty dollar backs is the universal trade dollar for all except three countries. Iran, Cuba, and Syria. I know, North Korea. Makes sense now? But that might be moving a little fast. So we're not going to move as fast. So, family, I'm going to get into some audio. It's kind of long. I'm going to stop it periodically. You know, kind of chime in, make my little comments or whatever. But it's very interesting. And there's quite a few. And I'm especially references to the different people who speaking, because I'm playing the audio, a video, but I'm actually going to play the audio because I really would like for y'all to hear and then know the different people that speaking, and you know, so you can know who they are if you want to, you know, look them up and do and kind of follow their work or whatever. So we're going to get ready to get into it, but if you can go to YouTube, like, check it out. It was published by, I want to say, is it Mises Media? MISESMEDIA. Again, that's MISESMEDIA. This particular video is titled Money, Banking, and the Federal Reserve. Again, Money, Banking, and the Federal Reserve, published by MISESMEDIA. So, again, I want to give them, you know, full credit for using their audio. So, without further ado, man, let's learn something today.
Committee knows of or can truly supervise its operations. These are the words of the late Professor Murray N. Rothbard, economist and academic vice president of the Ludwig von Mises Institute. The Institute is dedicated to the ideals of a free market and sound money. This program is dedicated to the memory of Murray N. Rothbard and his prolific work on money and banking. Americans have steadily declined. Incomes have remained flat or fallen, and the opportunities and security we once took for granted have begun to fade. For most families, one income no longer pays the bills. It requires two or more incomes to afford a home, pay medical and child care expenses, and put children through school. Unless present trends change, young workers are unlikely to ever live as well as their parents. Good jobs with a future are harder to come by. Education doesn't count for what it once did. Taxes continue to rise, while Social Security is going bankrupt. Private pensions are no longer reliable. Economic volatility and uncertainty are on the rise. Politicians espouse numerous theories about the cause of this country's economic woes. Seldom, however, do these officials look below the surface. The roots of our economic ills can be traced to central banking and our present monetary system. The Federal Reserve claims to manage our money. Instead, it makes our money worth less and less every day. It has generated continuous and worsening business cycles and lowered our living standards.
It's really no different from a burglar in your house wanting to steal your money. That's what the Federal Reserve does. It depreciates your savings. It takes away your economic security, and it ought to be treated as an institution that does that rather than something of alleged benefit.
Money is supposed to serve as a reliable standard of economic value, not a source of instability. Until we restore sound money and take away the government's ability to debase it, we have little hope of restoring the freedom and prosperity that made America great.
And we really have a choice of what we want in money. Do we want money that's going to be losing its value every year, or do we want money that's going to be gaining in value? If you are happy with your money losing value, then you want the present system. If you want money to increase in value, then you want a gold standard.
What is money? As the good that makes exchange possible, it's the foundation of every economic activity. In the earliest times, people traded goods and services directly. This form of exchange is known as barter.
That is, if a fishing tribe desired to have maybe wheat, which they themselves did not produce, they would seek out other individuals that produced wheat, and then they would exchange there for fish.
But barter had limitations in the marketplace.
Well, actually, people perceived pretty quickly problems with that direct exchange. If you wanted, for example, fish and you had wheat, but the people who had fish didn't desire the wheat, you were stuck, okay? Unless you went out and found some other good, possibly berries, that everyone in that society consumed. Then you would trade your wheat for the berries in full confidence then that you could turn around and trade the berries for the fish or anything else that you desired.
Eventually, the most widely accepted goods in a society became valued for their use in indirect exchange. Money is simply another name for the most generally accepted medium of exchange. Throughout history, many goods have served as money. Feathers from the quetzal bird were used for exchange by the Mayan Indians up to the 15th century in Central America. Tea leaves compressed into bricks were traded in East Asia through the 1800s. Wampum shells were money to North American Indians, while early American colonists traded beaver pelts, which had a high value both at home and abroad. Metal coins first emerged in Greece and Asia Minor during the 7th century B.C. Gold and silver were valued for their use and beauty in jewelry and the decorative arts. They were durable, easily divisible, and limited in supply. These precious metals also had a high value-to-weight ratio, making them easily transportable.
we might think back, or we can think back to a time when iron was used as money, for example, in Africa. But imagine going into Sears Roebuck and trying to purchase, let's say, a lawnmower for $350. That would take a ton of iron, whereas it would only take an ounce of gold.
In 1536, less than 50 years after Christopher Columbus set foot on American soil, a Spanish mint in Mexico City struck the first coins made in the New World. These silver coins eventually found their way into the British colonies. Great Britain's mercantilist policies deliberately tried to keep precious metals out of America, so the Spanish milled dollar became the unofficial currency. It was often divided into 8 pieces for smaller transactions, hence the term pieces of 8, with 1/4 of the coin being 2 bits. In 1792, Thomas Jefferson adopted the dollar as this country's official monetary unit.
He looked around, he investigated to see what were the American people using as money, and that was the dollar. And so that's why that dollar became the standard of the United States. And we went onto a gold and silver standard and started minting gold coins with the American Eagle, the $10 gold coin.
Jefferson, in particular, spoke eloquently of the dangers of paper money. During the War for Independence, the Continental Congress printed vast sums of paper money out of thin air to finance the army. The diluted money supply naturally depreciated to almost nothing, leading to the phrase, not worth a continental.
And the people who held on to these notes, who tended to be patriotic Americans, concerned about wanted America to be free of British control, lost everything. Whereas the Tories, who wanted nothing to do with this American government money, immediately got rid of it. And Pelletier Webster, the first American economist, and others who looked at this saw that this paper money, unbacked by gold, was extremely dangerous.
As early as the 16th century in Europe, goldsmiths stored gold coins for their customers for a fee and issued receipts for the gold to the depositor. Thus began the use of paper as money.
In other words, if you came in and deposited 10 ounces of gold for safekeeping, you got back receipts in the amount of 10 gold ounces. And those receipts entitled you to instantaneously redeem that gold.
These receipts soon became widely accepted as a means of exchange, since it was easier and safer to use the receipts for significant transactions. This was the origin of banknotes as money substitutes. These first bankers then took this process one step further.
In effect, if the goldsmith had 1,000 ounces of gold and 1,000 ounces of legitimate receipts being held by the depositor of that gold, he could increase his profits by merely printing up another 1,000 ounces worth of receipts and lending them out. Okay. In which case, you would effectively get 50% reserve banking or fractional reserve banking. Only a fraction, 50% of the receipts were now backed by gold.
There was no longer a 1-to-1 ratio of paper to gold. Now there could be 3 or 4 pieces of paper in circulation for every unit of gold in the vault. These bankers were no longer simply storing or warehousing gold for a fee. They were artificially inflating the money supply and loaning out these phony receipts at interest. This system became known as fractional reserve banking and was later transported to the early American colonies. It formed the root of American commercial banking and ultimately the Federal Reserve System.
This is a fraudulent system. It's not allowed in any other business. If you had a grain warehouse that had loaned out the grain it was supposed to have in storage, that's considered criminal. The guy would go to jail. But the banks are the one industry that's allowed to get away with this and to profit from it.
Alexander became the first Treasury Secretary, and in 1791 set up the first Bank of the United States as America's central bank to expand the supply of paper money for the benefit of the government and the commercial banks.
Alexander Hamilton believed in a strong central government, and he saw a central bank as one of the means by which the government could be centralized and by which its power could be expressed.
Thomas Jefferson opposed this view. He saw a central bank as an undemocratic tool of the Northeastern banking establishment. It was dismantled after 20 years.
Jefferson was an opponent of a strong central government and at all costs wanted to remove the central bank.
In 1816, the federal government made another attempt to set up an inflationary central bank. But this second bank of the United States was denounced by President Andrew Jackson as a monster bank for benefiting a few at the expense of many.
They inflated the money supply, which brought about a boom initially, that is prosperity to the country, followed by a bust. When they stopped inflating the money supply, many businesses that had depended on the low interest rates that were introduced or induced by the initial inflation went out of business.
Jackson succeeded in abolishing the second central bank in 1836. But by then, speculators had set up hundreds of new private banks with little or no gold to back the notes they issued. The nation's monetary system became more stable when the United States introduced a gold standard in 1834. The dollar was worth approximately 1/20th of an ounce of gold.
The gold standard was understood by the founding fathers, by Andrew Jackson and others, as being a money of the people. That is, it was a hard money, a money that could not be tampered with, that could not be inflated to permit government expenditures skyrocketing.
But by 1862, Abraham Lincoln needed to fund his invasion of the South. So once again, the government began to print up paper money.
Basically, the United States went off the gold standard in order to finance the Civil War. Okay. And you'll find in history that almost every large war, every major war, has involved a departure from the gold standard, because the gold standard put strict limits on government financing.
Lincoln's notes became known as greenbacks because they were printed in green ink rather than the usual black ink on the reverse side. These so-called fiat notes were deemed legal tender by the government, but they were not redeemable in gold.
Lincoln, at the cover of war, issued tremendous numbers of greenbacks. Gold was still circulating, but people were forced to accept these greenbacks as if they were at par with gold.
The government's power to print unbacked paper notes would later become the pillar of the Federal Reserve System. After the Civil War, the nation's monetary system became sounder when the U.S. adopted a gold standard.
We went back on the gold standard in 1879 and had probably the greatest period of growth and of prosperity ever in the country's history.
For nearly 20 years, the total output of goods and services grew at an unprecedented rate of 4% per year.
The reason being that with a sound money and without the ability to manipulate the interest rate, we had a lot of genuine saving and investment, which then led to more capital goods and higher labor productivity in the United States.
In the midst of this prosperity, the big industrialists and financiers were plotting to expand their empires with the help of government. With the passage of the Interstate Commerce Act of 1887, the large railroads succeeded in blocking their smaller competitors through regulation.
The ICC was put in place in order to protect the railroad owners from competition. Okay, it was not the case that it was going to protect consumers or shippers. In fact, consumers were hurt because ultimately, with higher railroad rates, they were forced to pay higher prices for the goods and services that were shipped across the country.
By 1896, they were poised to do the same thing with the banks. Two camps emerged as leaders in this economic war. They were led by J.P. Morgan, the world's most powerful private banker, and John D. Rockefeller, the oil tycoon. Morgan and Rockefeller were great adversaries, but despite their business differences, they both favored a central bank. They wanted cheap credit and an inflated money supply to finance the expansion of their empires.
Together, they led the campaign to sell the idea to the American public, which later led to the founding of the Federal Reserve.
If the American people got wind of the fact that this bank was not in their interests, in fact, they understood that it was in the interests of the financial elites who would use it to inflate the money supply and in doing so increase their own revenues, they would have been held to pay. Legislation would have never passed under those conditions. So it had to be sold to the American people as a way of making their currency more elastic.
The bank reform campaign received a boost in 1907 when there was a run on some of New York's biggest banks thanks to their fractional reserves. Panic spread among depositors who got wind of the bank's insolvency and tried to withdraw their money. The Knickerbocker Trust failed, and two other institutions went to the brink of bankruptcy despite a $35 million bailout from J.P. Morgan. Wall Street swiftly adopted the fear of bank failures to sell the idea of a central bank or lender of last resort to the American public.
So the Federal Reserve was to be the lender of last resort. In case any bank got into trouble, they wouldn't have to worry. They'd get the cash from Washington, D.C.
The question is, however, whether it is really desirable to have such a thing as a lender of last resort. Correct position appears to me that every single bank should be responsible for its own debts and contractual obligations. And if banks, through imprudent policy, then go bankrupt, this should not be considered a bad thing, but in fact considered to be a magnificent thing, because bankruptcies, the danger of bankruptcies is precisely what makes banks adhere to sound policies.
Bank runs and failures continued at an alarming rate. In 1908, the National Monetary Commission, headed by John D. Rockefeller Jr.'s father-in-law, Senator Nelson Aldrich, was set up to push for a central bank. November of 1910, under the guise of a duck hunting trip, six men took a secret train ride to an exclusive private club on Jekyll Island, Georgia, to write a central banking act. A classified gathering read like a who's who of American banking. There were two Rockefeller men, Aldrich and Frank Vanderlip of the National City Bank of New York. Two Morgan men, Henry P. Davidson from Morgan Bank, and Charles D. Norton, president of Morgan's First National Bank of New York. Paul Warburg, a Kuhn Loeb partner, and Assistant Treasury Secretary A. Piet Andrew, who was friendly to both camps. They spent a week at the luxurious club as Morgan's guests, crafting the proposals that would form the basis of the Federal Reserve System. It would be 3 years before their vision was realized. Just before Christmas, 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was passed by Congress and signed by President Wilson. It established a Federal Reserve system to oversee monetary policy and regulate the commercial banks.
It's no coincidence that the Federal Reserve system was established by the Wilson administration. This was the height of the Progressive Era, a time of tremendous government expansion of special interest deals in Washington.
There are 12 regional reserve banks concentrated in the East and the Midwest. The Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve controls and coordinates their activities. The board is made up of 7 members appointed by the president. Even though there were 12 regional banks, Wall Street soon ran the show. As president of the New York Fed, Morgan protege Benjamin Strong seized control of the board's open market committee operations. Remained the dominant force at the Fed until his death in 1928. The Federal Open Market Committee, now based in Washington, directs the Fed's most important instrument of monetary policy, the purchase and sale of government securities on the open market. To increase the supply of money and credit, that is, to inflate, the Fed buys government securities from a few hand-picked firms with newly created money. To tighten money and credit,
the Fed sells securities. In this, it can act on its own discretion.
Every government wants the ability to create new money. Okay? It's an alternative to raising taxes. Taxes, as we said, when they're raised, tend to be evoke a lot of resistance among the public. It's much less painless to increase the money supply. The effects, the negative effects, don't occur until 6 months, a year, 2 years later, at which time the increasing prices can be blamed on other factors, the weather, speculators, and so on.
Another device the Fed uses to control the amount of money in circulation is setting the discount rate. This is the interest rate charged to member banks when they borrow short-term from the so-called discount window. If the Fed lowers the discount rate for its loans, commercial banks will likely borrow more from the Fed. This increases the amount of funds banks have to lend. Bank credit thus becomes cheaper, as reflected in lower interest rates on bank loans and credit cards. The increase in funds available for banks to lend also increases the amount of money in the economy. The Fed can also manipulate the nation's money supply by raising or lowering the reserve requirement. Banks are required to set aside a percentage of their deposits as reserves to meet depositors' demands. When the Fed was established in 1913, it cut reserve requirements in half over the next 4 years, doubling the money supply by the end of World War I. But the Fed's real power lies in its monopoly to create money. Although the U.S. was still on the gold standard in 1913, it was quickly eroded as the Fed continued to expand the money supply. The first step was backing Federal Reserve notes by only 40% in gold, allowing the money supply to be increased 2.5 times. The inflationary effect of fractional reserve banking was also heightened by the central bank.
The commercial banks are permitted to create checkbook money on top of Federal Reserve notes. That is to say, the commercial banks are only obliged by law to hold reserves in the form of Federal Reserve notes of 10% to back all demand deposits that they have. 90% of the demand deposits are backed by nothing.
The Federal Reserve System adds another inflationary layer to an already unstable banking system. For example, if the central bank has $100 worth of gold reserves in its vaults and a 10% reserve requirement, it can print up $1,000 in new notes and deposits, which become the reserves of the commercial banks. Commercial banks take this $1,000, and if they're required to hold 10% again in reserve, they can multiply the $1,000 into $10,000 through fractional reserve loans. So an inverted pyramid is created with $100 worth of gold or real money at the bottom and $10,000 of inflated paper money at the top. As this $10,000 in new paper money circulates in the economy, it drives prices up, therefore reducing the buying power of ordinary citizens.
When they spend that money, people who get the new money first and are able to buy products with it benefit, and the people who get it at the end lose, because when they go to spend it, prices have already gone up, and so they're able to buy less. And so there's a transfer of wealth and of power from some segments of the economy to others because of the actions of the central bank. And basically those who benefit are the government itself, big banks, and government contractors, and anybody who's closely associated with the federal government.
By making enormous amounts of credit easily available, the Fed can also drive down interest rates, sending out the wrong signal to investors. It sets in motion an unsustainable investment boom that carries with it the seeds of its own destruction. It's this business cycle that is ultimately responsible for economic disasters such as the Great Depression. Soon after the Federal Reserve was established, the U.S. entered World War I. Once again, the government temporarily abandoned the gold standard to print more money to finance the war effort. The U.S. government borrowed heavily, and the national debt ballooned from $1 billion to $27 billion. A sharp spike of inflation followed. This set off a cycle of rapid expansion and contraction in the economy. To dampen the overheated economy, the Fed halted its inflation, causing interest rates to nearly double over the next 18 months. By 1921, the market began to recover. New technology helped to increase productivity. Markets developed for new cars and appliances. The 1920s were a period of extraordinary growth. But behind the scenes, much of this growth was distorted by a Fed-generated inflationary credit expansion.
This was the Roaring Twenties. This was a period of increasing affluence. That hid the inflation from American economists.
The Fed-generated bubble burst in the Wall Street crash of October 1929. Speculators who had borrowed money to buy shares when bank credit was readily available saw the stock market lose one-third of its value. Bank loans totaling $7 billion were outstanding. As the speculators defaulted on their loans, bank failures spiraled and the Great Depression set in.
Depositors lost their bank accounts, both their savings deposits and checking deposits. They saw them disappear into thin air.
In 1932, Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected president and quickly implemented a New Deal policy of spending us to prosperity. Even though we needed lower taxes and lower spending, his administration would seek unprecedented amounts of money to finance its big government programs. In his inaugural speech on March 4, 1933, Roosevelt vowed to put an end to poverty and the unemployment lines and get people back to work. It didn't work. The Depression got worse, thanks to increased central planning. FDR only succeeded in making the monetary system even less sound. Just after taking office, the president declared a four-day nationwide bank holiday, absolving the bankrupt fractional reserve banks of any need to repay their depositors. But before the banks reopened, the Roosevelt administration had to come up with a scheme deposits would be safe. It created the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation to lull the public into a sense of security. In reality, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation holds just half of 1% of all the deposits it insures. But what people are counting on is that the Fed, as the lender of last resort, would step in and print whatever money would be necessary to prevent a massive bank run. Mid-1930s, control of the Fed by the New York bankers was drawing to a close. The Morgan era ended when President Roosevelt, who was no friend of the Morgans, appointed Mariner Eccles as its governor. Eccles, a Republican from Utah, moved the activities of the Open Market Committee to Washington. President Roosevelt was on hand for the dedication of a new $3.5 million building to house the Fed.
I dedicate this building today to progress. To progress toward the ideal of an America in which every worker will be able to provide his family at all times with an ever-rising standard of American comfort.
1933 also marked the beginning of the end for the gold standard. There was no end to Roosevelt's appetite for spending on such New Deal programs as the gigantic $13 billion Tennessee Valley Authority, which funded vast areas of productive farmland to provide government-subsidized electricity. The Works Progress Administration, which spent $11 billion on make-work jobs and pork barrel public works. But the U.S. currency was tied to gold, which limited the amount of money the Fed could print to pay for these costly projects. So the government scrapped the gold standard for American citizens in 1933, and then Roosevelt confiscated the people's gold. As in World War I, the warring parties in the Second World War abandoned the gold standard to finance financed the war with central bank-generated inflation. After the war, there was an attempt to use the prestige of the gold standard to establish a global inflationary system. The world's financial leaders met at Bretton Woods in New Hampshire under the direction of the famous economist John Maynard Keynes. Their idea was to set up a new international monetary system that would have both gold and inflation.
Under this system, the U.S. dollar would be redeemable in gold, but only for foreign official institutions, central banks, and foreign governments, at the rate of $35 per ounce. All other currencies would have fixed exchange rates with the U.S. dollar, and they would be redeemable.
You can't handle the truth!
All right, family, I hope that was a little inciting. This audio is a little longer than expected, so what we're going to do, we're going to come back. We're going to pick this back up tomorrow. I want y'all to go ahead and follow on social media if you haven't followed. But I want to pick this, really want to pick this back up tomorrow, actually. And because we wanted to finish this part two for this. Because I don't really want to let this just sit out like it's real powerful information. And I really think it needs to be out. I see y'all in the chat. I do appreciate it. Yeah, man, we gonna raise the roof out this year. You know, we ain't on nothing back, no hoes barred. It's time for the truth to get out. All we doing is gossiping, following this gossip and all this bullshit out here. There's nothing good out here for us, family. Which is why, you know, why we always wanna focus on, you know, uplifting each other and getting information out of it, because we constantly kinks in this machine, fam. Constantly got kinks in your armor. It's something I wanted to read for y'all. Let me see if I can find it. So do want to get out before we get ready to get up out of here. And again, thanks to everybody overseas on this continent. Salute everybody up in Canada. Salute everybody in the UK. Salute our family in Tokyo, I'm sorry. Salute our family over in South Africa. Salute to everybody, man. Appreciate y'all for checking in with the Vane Verde Podcast. Any show ideas, inquisition, anybody interested in sponsoring, inquiring about sponsorship, go ahead and reach out to me, thevaneverdict@gmail.com. Again, that's thevaneverdict@gmail.com, family. All right, let me see what my favorite joint said. Okay. That's not right. So I just wanted to read to y'all. I don't know.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighs dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it.
You can't handle the truth!
BlogTalkRadio.com/TheVaneVerdict. Follow us on all social media platforms to stay in tune with all upcoming episodes. Facebook at The Vane Verde. Twitter at The Vane Verde. Instagram The_Vane_Verde. Google Plus at The Vane Verde. Skype Vane Verde. For all sponsorship inquiries and all show ideas inquiries, You can email us at DeVaneVerdick@gmail.com. Again, DeVaneVerdick@gmail.com. All love and support is greatly appreciated. GoFundMe.com/DeVaneVerdickPodcast or PayPal me at DeVaneVerdick. Peace of life, family.
You can't handle the truth.
DeVaneVerdickPodcast.